This is the listening paper of the National Examination in English, 2005. You will hear three different texts and do tasks on all of them. Turn to task one. Task one. You are going to hear a telephone conversation about the studying possibilities in an English-speaking country. You are going to hear it twice. Read the notes below. You will have 45 seconds to do this. Listen to the tape and fill in the missing information. Do not write more than four words. An example has been done for you.
Hello, this is the office of the British Council in Tallinn. Alex speaking. How may I help you?
Hello, I'm Mrs. Metz, and I am calling to ask about the possibilities to study in British universities for Estonian people.
Okay, what would you like to know?
Well, I'm curious about the entry requirements.
Yeah, there are a couple of things here. There are academic requirements and English language requirements. Most British universities will accept Estonian high school graduation leaving certificates. We've also got English language requirements. All British universities are going to need students to have a sufficient basic level of English language. They may have to take an English language test. For example, IELTS score of 6 to 6.5 is usually needed.
IELTS. How do you spell that?
That's IELTS.
Uh-huh. And where can you take that?
Oh, you can take it here at your local British Council office.
Okay. So I was also interested in where to find a good university.
Anywhere in Britain, there are lots of good universities. Probably the best place to look, though, is the website. There's a really good database on www.educationuk.org.
And what would the tuition fee be?
Okay. Estonian students get the same deal as British students. You get the British home fee status because you're a member of the European Union. This year, that's £1,150.
And can you apply to the British Council for scholarships or to get a grant?
Yeah, the British Council does administer a few scholarships. If you take a look at our website, you'll see there's a list of the scholarships available there.
And when should people apply to the university?
Okay, if you want to do an undergraduate course, a bachelor's course at a British university, first thing, you make your application through UCAS, that's the University and Colleges Admissions Service. Applications through UCAS take place a year before you start your degree.
I see. And do you need a visa to study in the UK?
No, you certainly don't. Estonian citizens don't need a visa to travel or to study in Britain.
I see. And what kind of accommodation is available when people are studying in the UK?
Different universities have different systems. At some universities, there are university halls of residence where you can get very cheap and safe accommodation. Other universities will usually have an accommodation office, which will recommend private rented houses and apartments and rooms for students to stay in.
And when I have my qualification, my UK qualification, would it be recognised in my home country?
The British university system is one of the oldest in the world. British university degrees are recognised all over the world. You should check with your local national education authority just to check that the qualification will be recognised for your own peace of mind.
And when I'm there, can I get help with problems, or where can I get help with problems?
Yeah, most universities have student counsellors, or sometimes they call them moral supervisors, who are there to help you with advice on your personal issues, financial things, health matters, family matters. Don't worry about that. There are always people to help.
Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful with my questions. I think I have a good idea of how to do this now. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure. Bye.
Goodbye.
Listen again and check your answers.
Hello, this is the office of the British Council in Tallinn. Alex speaking. How may I help you?
Hello, I'm Mrs. Metz, and I am calling to ask about the possibilities to study in British universities for Estonian people.
Okay, what would you like to know?
Well, I'm curious about the entry requirements.
Yeah, there are a couple of things here. There are academic requirements and English language requirements. Most British universities will accept Estonian high school graduation leaving certificates. We've also got English language requirements. All British universities are going to need students to have a sufficient basic level of English language. They may have to take an English language test. For example, IELTS score of 6 to 6.5 is usually needed.
IELTS. How do you spell that?
That's IELTS.
Uh-huh. And where can you take that?
Oh, you can take it here at your local British Council office.
Okay. So I was also interested in where to find a good university.
Anywhere in Britain, there are lots of good universities. Probably the best place to look, though, is the website. There's a really good database on www.educationuk.org.
And what would the tuition fee be?
Okay, Estonian students get the same deal as British students. You get the British home fee status because you're a member of the European Union. This year, that's 1,150 British pounds.
And can you apply to the British Council for scholarships or to get a grant?
Yeah, the British Council does administer a few scholarships. If you take a look at our website, you'll see there's a list of the scholarships available there.
And when should people apply to the university?
Okay, if you want to do an undergraduate course, a bachelor's course at a British university, first thing, you make your application through UCAS, that's the University and Colleges Admissions Service. Applications through UCAS take place a year before you start your degree.
I see. And do you need a visa to study in the UK?
No, you certainly don't. Estonian citizens don't need a visa to travel or to study in Britain.
I see. And what kind of accommodation is available when people are studying in the UK?
Different universities have different systems. At some universities, there are university halls of residence where you can get very cheap and safe accommodation. Other universities will usually have an accommodation office, which will recommend private rented houses and apartments and rooms for students to stay in.
And when I have my qualification, my UK qualification, would it be recognised in my home country?
The British university system is one of the oldest in the world. British university degrees are recognised all over the world. You should check with your local national education authority just to check that the qualification will be recognised for your own peace of mind.
And when I'm there, can I get help with problems, or where can I get help with problems?
Yeah, most universities have student counsellors, or sometimes they call them moral supervisors, who are there to help you with advice on your personal issues, financial things, health matters, family matters. Don't worry about that. There are always people to help.
Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful with my questions. I think I have a good idea of how to do this now. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure. Bye.
Goodbye.
This is the end of Task 1. Turn to Task 2. Task 2. You are going to hear a radio program. You are going to hear it twice. Read the sentences below. You will have 90 seconds to do this. Listen to the tape and circle the right answers. An example has been done for you.
Researchers have found that men who eat sweets and chocolates regularly live for almost a year longer than those men who never or only occasionally eat them. This new evidence comes from a study of approximately 8,000 American men over a period of 80 years. The longest living men were those who ate chocolate between 1 and 3 times a month. They cut their risk of death by a third. Men who ate chocolate and sweets once or twice a week cut their risks by a quarter.
Some of the world's most endangered plants have a firmer grasp on survival than anyone had suspected until now. A study by Botanic Gardens Conservation International says about 9,000 species which are threatened in the wild are in fact thriving in botanic gardens. This is about a quarter of all the plants which are known to be at risk, but a fraction of the possible total. Scientists say that anything up to 100,000 species may disappear because of both habitat destruction and climate change.
UK researchers have collected the first hard evidence of monkeys using tools. Cambridge researchers observed wild capuchin monkeys in the Brazilian forest using stones to help them forage for food on an almost daily basis. Scientists have already known for some time that capuchins use tools in captivity, but have only occasionally observed them doing so in the wild. The monkeys typically held the stone with one hand and used it to hit the ground quickly 3 to 6 times, while simultaneously scooping away the soil with the other hand.
Tiny robots powered by living muscle have been created by scientists at the University of California, Los Angeles. The devices were formed by growing rat cells on microscopic silicon chips. Less than a millimeter long, the minuscule robots can move themselves without any external source of power. The work is a dramatic example of the marriage of biotechnology with the tiny world of nanotechnology. In nanotechnology, researchers often turn to the natural world for inspiration.
More research has been published linking smoking to health risks, with a study suggesting the habit affects IQ. Researchers looked at how the cognitive abilities of smokers and non-smokers changed over time. They found smokers performed significantly worse in 5 separate tests. About 465 people were tested on their mental abilities in 1947. They were tested again in 2002 when they reached the age of 64. Current or former smokers were found to perform less well in the tests that evaluated their memory and learning and how quickly they processed information.
More and more people are being caught up in a growing number of natural disasters, a UN agency said on Friday. The International Strategy for Disaster Reduction said the increase in numbers vulnerable to natural shocks was due partly to global warming. It has said 254 million people were affected by natural hazards last year, nearly 3 times as many as in 1990. The assessment comes as the Caribbean and the U.S. are being hit by a series of devastating hurricanes. Events including earthquakes and volcanoes, floods and droughts, storms, fires, and landslides killed about 83,000 people in 2003, up from about 53,000 deaths 13 years earlier. The statistics said there was a consistent trend of the last decade of an increasing number of people affected by disasters.
Scientists have been studying the coral reefs off the Gulf of Mexico and have discovered an increase in the number of coral infections. In 1996, researchers found sickly reefs in 24 places. Coral reefs are dying at an alarming rate. In one case, a reef had lost more than one-third of its coral in 3 years. At the moment, very little is understood about the diseases harming the coral. What is known is that the diseases are most common in areas where there is human development.
Natural disasters can be a threat to the growing expansion of big cities underground, the United Nations says. It says developers often burrow beneath the surface without knowing enough of the risks and with inadequate plans to lessen the effects of any disaster. The warning comes from experts at the United Nations University just before a conference on how to reduce disasters. The UNU experts say growing urban land pressure is making it increasingly attractive to find new subterranean space for subways, shopping malls, car parks, and other needs. But an expert of the UNU says studies of potential natural disaster risks are often neglected.
Food firms have been warned by the EU to stop advertising junk food to children and make labeling clearer. The EU's Health and Consumer Affairs Commissioner said that unless voluntary steps were taken, the EU would introduce legislation. He said the move was needed to fight rising levels of obesity, and he wanted significant commitments from the food industry within a year. Experts estimate that almost 25% of children in the EU are now obese. About 400,000 are becoming either obese or overweight every year.
China is to remeasure the world's tallest peak, Mount Everest, because of fears it may be shrinking. A recent survey found the summit had dropped 1.3 meters because of global warming. The height of the mountain, which lies on the border between China and Nepal, has long been a subject of controversy. It was first measured in the 1850s, but a more accurate Indian survey 100 years later calculated the mountain to be 8,848 meters tall. In 1999, American scientists remeasured the mountain using global positioning satellite technology. They and the National Geographic Society concluded that the peak was 2 meters higher. But now global warming is melting glaciers on the world's highest mountain, apparently causing it to shrink.
Scientists believe they have discovered the reason why mosquitoes find some of us more tasty than others. It was already known that some people produce come-and-get-me smells, which appeal to the mosquitoes. Research found those less likely to be bitten produced odors which masked these scents. The natural repellent could be used to protect everyone from the bugs. Until that happens, people who are frequently bitten might benefit from hanging around those who escape relatively unscathed.
Listen again and check your answers.
Researchers have found that men who eat sweets and chocolates regularly live for almost a year longer than those men who never or only occasionally eat them. This new evidence comes from a study of approximately 8,000 American men over a period of 80 years. The longest living men were those who ate chocolate between 1 and 3 times a month. They cut their risk of death by a third. Men who ate chocolate and sweets once or twice a week cut their risks by a quarter.
Some of the world's most endangered plants have a firmer grasp on survival than anyone had suspected until now. A study by Botanic Gardens Conservation International says about 9,000 species which are threatened in the wild are in fact thriving in botanic gardens. This is about a quarter of all the plants which are known to be at risk, but a fraction of the possible total. Scientists say that anything up to 100,000 species may disappear because of both habitat destruction and climate change.
UK researchers have collected the first hard evidence of monkeys using tools. Cambridge researchers observed wild capuchin monkeys in the Brazilian forest using stones to help them forage for food on an almost daily basis. Scientists have already known for some time that capuchins use tools in captivity, but have only occasionally observed them doing so in the wild. The monkeys typically held the stone with one hand and used it to hit the ground quickly 3 to 6 times, while simultaneously scooping away the soil with the other hand.
Tiny robots powered by living muscle have been created by scientists at the University of California, Los Angeles. The devices were formed by growing rat cells on microscopic silicon chips. Less than a millimeter long, the minuscule robots can move themselves without any external source of power. The work is a dramatic example of the marriage of biotechnology with the tiny world of nanotechnology. In nanotechnology, researchers often turn to the natural world for inspiration.
More research has been published linking smoking to health risks, with a study suggesting the habit affects IQ. Researchers looked at how the cognitive abilities of smokers and non-smokers changed over time. They found smokers performed significantly worse in 5 separate tests. About 465 people were tested on their mental abilities in 1947. They were tested again in 2002 when they reached the age of 64. Current or former smokers were found to perform less well in the tests that evaluated their memory and learning and how quickly they processed information.
More and more people are being caught up in a growing number of natural disasters, a UN agency said on Friday. The International Strategy for Disaster Reduction said the increase in numbers vulnerable to natural shocks was due partly to global warming. It has said 254 million people were affected by natural hazards last year, nearly 3 times as many as in 1990. The assessment comes as the Caribbean and the U.S. are being hit by a series of devastating hurricanes. Events including earthquakes and volcanoes, floods and droughts, storms, fires, and landslides killed about 83,000 people in 2003, up from about 53,000 deaths 13 years earlier. The statistics said there was a consistent trend of the last decade of an increasing number of people affected by disasters.
Scientists have been studying the coral reefs off the Gulf of Mexico and have discovered an increase in the number of coral infections. In 1996, researchers found sickly reefs in 24 places. Coral reefs are dying at an alarming rate. In one case, a reef had lost more than one-third of its coral in 3 years. At the moment, very little is understood about the diseases harming the coral. What is known is that the diseases are most common in areas where there is human development.
Natural disasters can be a threat to the growing expansion of big cities underground, the United Nations says. It says developers often burrow beneath the surface without knowing enough of the risks and with inadequate plans to lessen the effects of any disaster. The warning comes from experts at the United Nations University just before a conference on how to reduce disasters. The UNU experts say growing urban land pressure is making it increasingly attractive to find new subterranean space for subways, shopping malls, car parks, and other needs. But an expert of the UNU says studies of potential natural disaster risks are often neglected.
Food firms have been warned by the EU to stop advertising junk food to children and make labeling clearer. The EU's Health and Consumer Affairs Commissioner said that unless voluntary steps were taken, the EU would introduce legislation. He said the move was needed to fight rising levels of obesity, and he wanted significant commitments from the food industry within a year. Experts estimate that almost 25% of children in the EU are now obese. About 400,000 are becoming either obese or overweight every year.
China is to remeasure the world's tallest peak, Mount Everest, because of fears it may be shrinking. A recent survey found the summit had dropped 1.3 meters because of global warming. The height of the mountain, which lies on the border between China and Nepal, has long been a subject of controversy. It was first measured in the 1850s, but a more accurate Indian survey 100 years later calculated the mountain to be 8,848 meters tall. In 1999, American scientists remeasured the mountain using global positioning satellite technology. They and the National Geographic Society concluded that the peak was 2 meters higher. But now global warming is melting glaciers on the world's highest mountain, apparently causing it to shrink.
Scientists believe they have discovered the reason why mosquitoes find some of us more tasty than others. It was already known that some people produce come-and-get-me smells, which appeal to the mosquitoes. Research found those less likely to be bitten produced odors which masked these scents. The natural repellent could be used to protect everyone from the bugs. Until that happens, people who are frequently bitten might benefit from hanging around those who escape relatively unscathed.
This is the end of Task 2. Turn to Task 3. Task 3. You are going to hear an interview with a famous writer. You are going to hear it twice. Study the notes below. You will have 45 seconds to do this. Listen to the talk and fill in the missing data. An example has been done for you. Do not write more than 4 words. Today in the studio, we have an author of many well-known novels, Mr. Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett got his first short story published when he was 13 years old. In 1983, he wrote his first Discworld novel, The Color of Magic, and that changed his life. Up until now, he has written more than 20 Discworld novels, and there's more to come. Mr. Pratchett, how did you become a writer?
Well, I wrote a story and sent it off to a magazine, and they paid me some money. It was as simple as that. I mean, there wasn't any kind of agonizing. I just did it.
Was writing something that you had in mind from early on?
No. I wanted to be an astronomer, because I thought that being an astronomer meant that you could stay up late at night looking at the stars. Then I found out that really you spent your time doing mathematics, and I've never been any good at maths. After I sold a few stories while I was a kid, I thought it would be quite nice to be a writer, but I realized it would be almost impossible. I mean, you can't set out to be a writer, so I got a job as a reporter on a local newspaper so I could make a living out of writing. I could make a definite living. I would be very, very suspicious of someone that just left school or university and suddenly became a writer. I think becoming a writer happens in the same way. I think a writer is something you evolve into, not something you set out to become.
And what was the first book you wrote?
The first book was called The Carpet People. I wrote it when I was 17. It was published when I was 20. I was so ignorant about how you do this sort of thing that I looked up publishers in the local telephone book and just sent it to the nearest one.
And was it accepted straight away?
Yes, it was accepted straight away.
So when did you have the idea for Discworld, and what inspired it?
Well, the physical shape of it is based on one of those myths of mankind. The idea that the world is flat and goes through space on the back of a giant turtle is one of the great commonplace myths of the world. I feel that I've always known about that. I think I must have found it in books on astronomy when I was a kid. It features a lot in Hindu mythology, for example. I just chose that because it was a naturally ridiculous world. I didn't think about it very much. I knew about the mythology, and I just wanted a crazy world to set things on. The crazier the better, because I wanted the people to be quite normal, but I wanted the world to be crazy.
Now, did it become more difficult to come up with ideas as the series went on?
No. That was a short answer. You've got to remember that for an author, ideas are nothing. Ideas are as free as the air. The things that make a book work are far more complicated and to do with characterization and things like that.
And what, in your opinion, makes your book so successful?
I honestly don't know. If I think about it, I come up with a different answer every day. I'm not sure if it's the kind of question you should ask me. It's like asking the man on the tightrope how he keeps his balance. The last thing you want him to do is to start thinking about it, because then he's going to fall off. I think one of the cornerstones is that people are slightly more intelligent than they look. I don't think the education system is quite what it's cracked up to be, and people are doing a lot of educating themselves from television and out of papers and odds and ends, like I did.
Well, thank you very much, and we're all waiting for your next novel to be published.
Thank you.
Listen again and check your answers. Today in the studio, we have an author of many well-known novels, Mr. Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett got his first short story published when he was 13 years old. In 1983, he wrote his first Discworld novel, The Color of Magic, and that changed his life. Up until now, he has written more than 20 Discworld novels, and there's more to come. Mr. Pratchett, how did you become a writer?
Well, I wrote a story and sent it off to a magazine, and they paid me some money. It was as simple as that. I mean, there wasn't any kind of agonizing. I just did it.
Was writing something that you had in mind from early on?
No. I wanted to be an astronomer, because I thought that being an astronomer meant that you could stay up late at night looking at the stars. Then I found out that really you spent your time doing mathematics, and I've never been any good at maths. After I sold a few stories while I was a kid, I thought it would be quite nice to be a writer, but I realized it would be almost impossible. I mean, you can't set out to be a writer, so I got a job as a reporter on a local newspaper so I could make a living out of writing. I could make a definite living. I would be very, very suspicious of someone that just left school or university and suddenly became a writer. I think becoming a writer happens in the same way. I think a writer is something you evolve into, not something you set out to become.
And what was the first book you wrote?
The first book was called The Carpet People. I wrote it when I was 17. It was published when I was 20. I was so ignorant about how you do this sort of thing that I looked up publishers in the local telephone book and just sent it to the nearest one.
And was it accepted straight away?
Yes, it was accepted straight away.
So when did you have the idea for Discworld, and what inspired it?
Well, the physical shape of it is based on one of those myths of mankind. The idea that the world is flat and goes through space on the back of a giant turtle is one of the great commonplace myths of the world. I feel that I've always known about that. I think I must have found it in books on astronomy when I was a kid. It features a lot in Hindu mythology, for example. I just chose that because it was a naturally ridiculous world. I didn't think about it very much. I knew about the mythology and I just wanted a crazy world to set things on. The crazier the better, because I wanted the people to be quite normal, but I wanted the world to be crazy.
Now, did it become more difficult to come up with ideas as the series went on?
No. That was a short answer. You've got to remember that for an author, ideas are nothing. Ideas are as free as the air. The things that make a book work are far more complicated and to do with characterization and things like that.
And what, in your opinion, makes your book so successful?
I honestly don't know. If I think about it, I come up with a different answer every day. I'm not sure if it's the kind of question you should ask me. It's like asking the man on the tightrope how he keeps his balance. The last thing you want him to do is to start thinking about it, because then he's going to fall off. I think one of the cornerstones is that people are slightly more intelligent than they look. I don't think the education system is quite what it's cracked up to be, and people are doing a lot of educating themselves from television and out of papers and odds and ends, like I did.
Well, thank you very much, and we're all waiting for your next novel to be published.
Thank you.
This is the end of the listening paper. Now turn to the reading paper.